In the Moment on SDPB is supported by the South Dakota Humanities Council, presenting the South Dakota Festival of Books, September 20th through 22nd in Brookings.
Summer in South Dakota means music. From SDPB, today is Thursday, July 25th. This is In the Moment. We'll preview this weekend's Montrose Music Festival, what makes it unique in the world of summer music gatherings. Scrawl the name of your hometown on the back of your lawn chair and ask the nearest guitar player to show you what they've got. Maestro Delta David Geyer didn't care much for the work of Franz Schubert. Then, last May, he spent the month studying the songs and symphonies of a composer who died far too young. Then, Geyer's love for Schubert blossomed. We will bring you Schubert's Symphony No. 9, the first and second movements. That's all part of our Summer with the Symphony listening experiences. We're broadcasting live today from SDPB's Kirby Family Studio in Sioux Falls. I'm Lori Walsh. You're in the moment. News is first. You're listening to In the Moment on SDPB. I'm Lori Walsh. The Montrose Music Festival is this weekend. It's a festival with an intimate and unique format. Jay Wagner is one of the musicians lined up, and he returns to SDPB's Kirby Family Studio in Sioux Falls for a preview. Welcome back. Thanks for being here.
Oh, it's good to be here. I'm really excited to be back in.
This is very much part of your life, you literally just got out of the car from another gig, made time for us, and then you'll head to Montrose and then head off to another one. Tell me a little bit about what your life is like over the summer with all the travel and playing.
Well, the summer is when I travel the most, and you go all over the place. I live in Austin, and so Austin's really hot during the summer. So you organize your tours. And, of course, there's festivals during the summer up north. Yeah. And there goes my phone, sorry. And you go, I go to Alaska soon, and then, Minneapolis, just all over the place. I don't know.
Yeah. Is that the time, do you write anything new during that time, or is that the time just to sort of get through and then the writing happens over the winter months? Or like, what's the process?
Usually the writing is more, I run a songwriter retreat in down by the border of Mexico and Texas in October called Crooked Crow. And most of my writing kind of happens around there. And after that, it's like writing season, it's like fishing season or something.
Right.
But during the summer, I have a hard time memorizing all my lyrics, and so if I start writing, I get more excited about the new songs, and so I have to really pay attention to what I'm performing,
What's special about this festival in Montrose?
Oh, Montrose is, first of all, the creator of Montrose Music Festival is just like a kind of a top-shelf guy, if I can say that. His name's Matt Faulkner, and he's just fun. He calls me and he uses all these phrases like, I want to gnaw on your ear for a while. And that means you want to talk. And that's pretty much how the festival is. It's like in a small little town, 20 miles from
Sioux Falls.
Sioux Falls, yeah. And it's just all about the campfires and the community and all the little shops around there. Like the cafe has us play in there, and then people set up outside, and there's like little mini stages, and there's campfires, and it's all about the beauty of songwriting and community. And what's so neat about it is the community comes out, and if you've never experienced anything like this, you should come out because it's just really, really a top shelf festival.
You bring your lawn chair, you write the name of your hometown on your lawn chair.
Yeah, you set up your own.
Set up your little space.
Yeah.
Go and join a song circle. Matt sent me the digital program this year, so you're going to get some digital downloads of the etiquette. So if you're nervous about messing it up, you're not going to mess it up. You'll be able to just read, what's the protocol for joining a song circle.
Yeah, he's got it really organized this year.
Yeah, he does, yeah. And basically, if I see you with a guitar, I might just be like, hey, what are you playing?
Yeah, and play me a song.
Play me a song.
And what's neat is all the songs kind of represent, even though you don't think you represent that you live in Minnesota or that you are from Colorado or you're from Texas, you hear the states and everybody's songs. Like if somebody's driving up from Dallas or something, you hear that song in them that they're playing up here in Montrose.
Really?
And it's kind of a beautiful thing to see the diversity in our songwriting as far as as Americans, you know.
Yeah, and this is very much a rural, a celebration of the rural community. And that's part of the reason why you put your name on the back of the chair is, like, if you're from Sioux Falls, like, you're showing up for Montrose.
Yeah.
And that means something. Because Montrose shows up for you, Sioux Falls. Right? Yeah. Go spend some money there now.
Yeah, it's great. It's funny because there's a group coming from Madison, and that's where Sundrop Cola comes from.
Okay.
And so they bought, like, $175 worth of Sundrop soda to give away. And they have it's called Camp Sundrop, and they're all songwriters out of that area. And it's just neat to see, like, the comedy from each town, you know, that you would never know.
We're going to direct people to sdpb.org/news, or you really can just Google Montrose Music Festival. You can find them on Facebook. It starts tomorrow, goes from Friday through Sunday. It's just a really cool, montrosemusicfestival.org is the actual website as well. It's just groovy. And to what you said before, Matt is the most authentic human being.
Everybody loves Matt.
Yeah, everybody loves Matt. Go out and just say hi to Matt.
I think I've met one person who didn't like Matt, and we're still trying to figure out if they're human or not. So,
what you said about in our last minute here, your town shows up, your state shows up in your song. When you're teaching songwriting or you're at the songwriting workshop on the border, are you telling people to do that? Like, or does it just show up?
Yeah, bring your voice, and then and you know, when you start hanging around Colorado songwriters, it's like you don't think you're getting influenced, but you are. Then you bring that back to, you know, Arizona or Texas or something, and you know, like, I don't know, just in Texas, like, I'll write a song and the Rio Grande would be in it or something, you know.
There it is.
And somebody in Michigan may not use that, you know.
Right.
But you don't realize it, and it's like it's a neat way of representing your local without realizing it. You know?
Yeah. Well, this is a special thing. We love talking about it every year. I'm hoping to get out there this weekend and bring a microphone and just talk to some people.
That's a golden.
That's my goal. Yeah. Hopefully we'll get there. We'll see. Jay Wagner, thank you so much.
Oh, I love being here representing that beautiful festival.
You're listening to In the Moment on SDPB. I'm Lori Walsh. The composer Franz Schubert lived in the time of Beethoven. Schubert had no trouble making a name for himself in spite of the full-throttled influence of the elder Beethoven. Schubert had abundant talent and innovative musical ideas. What he didn't have was time. For today's Summer with the Symphony, we hear Schubert's Symphony No. 9, performed by the South Dakota Symphony Orchestra. Before we get to the music, here's my conversation with Maestro Delta David Geyer about how he discovered a love for one of history's nuanced geniuses.
Well, about a year ago, I did a deep dive into Schubert. We haven't done much Schubert since I've been here. We did the Unfinished Symphony years ago.
Sure.
And there's a reason for that, because I really didn't get Schubert. And I'm a little bit ashamed to say that, because people who get Schubert are fanatics. String players who play chamber music, pianists who play his solo works, singers who sing his songs. I deliberately programmed the Ninth Symphony of Schubert. It's his last symphony because you know, we need to be playing Schubert and we haven't done much of it. But also to really force myself, really, to confront this composer that I really didn't know that much about. So I spent the month of May last year, the entire month of May, with Schubert. I cleared my schedule, and I began with the songs. I knew that's where I had to start. He wrote hundreds of songs for solo voice, and Dietrich Fischer-Dieskau was my guide. And I did have a biography and some commentary at my side. I didn't even touch the Ninth Symphony till the end of the month. I went through all six masses, just a lot of chamber music. Robbie Earhart, our principal cellist, came over to the house, and we talked about Schubert, played Schubert. because he's one of those fanatics. By the time I got to the ninth, it just flowed. My analysis of it just simply flowed because I understood him for the first time. Now, this work, it holds a very special place because it's his only mature symphony. And so we're talking about a composer who died at age 31.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, so he wrote this piece right after Beethoven's Ninth Symphony. He was alive and at the premiere of Beethoven's Ninth Symphony.
Okay.
And he was the one that was going to take up the mantle from Beethoven.
Hmm.
But he died, people think of syphilis, at age 31. And it's a huge tragedy. Like, you just, yet another one of those composers, you think, wow, you know, what if they'd lived another 31 years?
Yeah. I want to hear what's next, but I can't.
Right.
I have at my disposal only what he was able to accomplish in an incredibly brief period of time.
Well, from a symphonic point of view, this Ninth Symphony is a huge departure from anything he composed
really?
Before.
Yeah.
And it's monumental. It's an hour long, almost as long as Beethoven's Ninth. And it's full of you know, richness of harmony, melodic invention, form, you know, just invention on that Beethoven model of taking little motifs and spinning them out and creating new ideas that come from one idea leading to the next. Just absolutely ingenious, but not like Beethoven, not a copy. Not simply an evolution. I mean, he was his own composer. That's why I say it would really be interesting to know what he would have done beyond this.
What does it say about him to be at that age, to be at the premiere, to be in the cultural space, and yet be his own composer? That's exciting to me.
Oh, it's terribly exciting. Well, so in this tradition of what we call classical music, I mean, the composers were imitating one another to begin with, but it was really, you know, like, okay, so what are you going to do now?
Yeah.
Where are you going to take this art form? You know, unlike a lot of 20th century art where, you know, innovation was the touchstone and you had to have your own voice to begin with, that was not the tradition. The tradition was to come from the composers who came before you, and yes, to imitate them to begin with, but then the expectation was that you would grow. And there's a lot of composers that never did. I mean, I could list all the Sammartinis and Louis Spohr and people. These are composers that nobody's ever heard of for good reason. Salieri, from Amadeus, the movie Amadeus.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, there's a reason Salieri's not done very much, because he was unfortunate. He lived at the same time as Mozart, and Mozart trounced him. So, like, that's just the way it goes. But nobody would have trounced Schubert, you know. So he's just coming into his own.
We are going to hear the first and second movements of this today. What are some of the things that you should listen for, that you might be rewarded, you know, by listening for in movements 1 and 2?
You can listen to how he takes ideas and varies them. So there's a long, slow introduction to the first movement. It's gorgeous. It starts with two horns playing in unison, and it's what we would call a motto theme. It's a, you know, this serves as a as kind of the, well, it's like the first four notes of Beethoven's Fifth Symphony, the ba-ba-ba-ba. Like, you take those notes and you can hear how Beethoven uses the melody and the rhythm and the harmony that come out of those four notes through the rest of the symphony. Same thing here. You've got this opening eight bars of these two horns playing in unison, and this is the theme out of which everything else will grow. It's repeated immediately in the woodwinds, accompanied by strings playing pizzicato, which plucking the instruments underneath, and then he builds it from there. It's in a very dramatic way, and then we get to the allegro, the fast portion of the movement, which it evolves. The slow introduction evolves organically into a faster tempo. And you get this this kind of triumphant, almost marching kind of theme. And he'll build this throughout the next, I don't know, however many, 10 minutes or so, and contrast it with another theme that is more gentle. This is the typical, quote-unquote, classical method of composing. You take a like a heroic theme, and then you take a lyrical theme, and you present them separate from each other, but then they, throughout the rest of the movement, they inform one another, and they have a dialogue. You know, so you can listen for that. Like, how's the march theme go with the lyrical theme, and what do they? How does he use those melodic ideas in different ways? So that's something to listen to in the first movement. The second movement, it really is like a march, but begins with the strings and the melodic material is in the cellos and the basses. But then there's an oboe solo, a fantastic oboe solo. Of course, is played fantastically by Geoffrey Paul. One commentator said that this melody comes somewhere east of Vienna, meaning it's got a gypsy flavor to it, you know. And of course, a lot of composers in that Austro-Hungarian Empire were fascinated, and you know, borrowed melodic ideas in particular from you know, gypsy dances and songs. So you can hear that in the movement. The most dramatic moment of the entire symphony takes place in the climax of the second movement, and it is huge. I mean, it starts so unassuming, so gentle, with this one oboe solo. But then about two-thirds of the way through the movement, it builds this huge climax, and then it releases and resolves towards the end of the movement. So that's something else to listen for.
The time that you spent with Schubert, well worth it for you.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I'm sold. I'm a fan, as they say. Yeah, I look forward to exploring more of what can be done. There are a lot of options, fortunately, even though he was only 31 when he died.
The music is next after a break on listener-supported SDPB. You're listening to In the Moment on SDPB. I'm Lori Walsh. SDPB's Summer with the Symphony is a series of listening experiences that brings you recorded performances by the South Dakota Symphony Orchestra. Today, Franz Schubert's Symphony No. 9, The Great C Major, will bring you the first and second movements today, the third and fourth tomorrow. Here is the South Dakota Symphony Orchestra under the direction of Maestro Delta David Geyer. This performance was recorded live at the Washington Pavilion in Sioux Falls, February 20th, 2024.
Thank you.
And that is our show for today. We hope that it served you. Tomorrow on In the Moment, summer in South Dakota offers a wide variety of musical experiences. We are going to preview the Multicultural Music Festival at Levitt in Sioux Falls. Plus, you're going to hear the second half of Schubert's Symphony No. 9. You just heard the first half, Movements 3 and 4, tomorrow. It is all part of our Summer with the Symphony listening experiences. Enjoy the summer sun. And we've got music for you for every side of the river. From all of us at SDPB, I'm Lori Walsh. Thanks for listening.